Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
This podcast is sponsored by Monarch.
Lifesaver.
Game changer.
The best thing to ever happen to my finances.
The people have spoken. Monarch makes personal financing a breeze.
Monarch is an intuitive, powerful, collaborative finance app that can help you save, budget, and keep your financial life in shape.
With Monarch, I can see my account balances, transactions, and investments in one place, so I always know what's going on with my money.
Whether you're saving for your first home, thinking about starting a family, your own business, or planning for retirement, Monarch is here for you every step of the way.
Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Monarch and manage your finances more effectively. See what thousands of people are saying about Monarch, the app Wall Street Journal voted the best budgeting app of 2024. Collaborate with your partner or financial advisor at no additional cost. Get a 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. That's monarchmoney.com/podcast for your free trial. monarchmoney.com/podcast.
Welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge and Cheese, JC Abbott, back in action, baby. How was the week off, JC?
It was good. It was good. I enjoyed a little rest and relaxation.
Lovely. Hodge, man, what's going on there? You got a do-rag on, beanie cap? What is it?
I'm a man of many hats and headwear, and I got the do-rag on. So if anybody wants to watch on YouTube and see the do-rag, they can check us out.
It's a wonderful multicolor. There's like a pattern on there. It's quite nice.
I got a big old bag of them off Amazon, so I'm going to be changing it up. We'll have some fun. One of them has flames on it, so I'm going to feel a little spicy. Ooh. I could put on my fiery do-rag.
Don't hate the bald man. Just appreciate it, okay? Man can do what he wants.
I stop about hating the bald. My head, it's like 12 degrees in Winnipeg right now. It is cold.
I'm just talking about other people out there. There are people that didn't want you to shave your head, Hodge.
Oh, no, I don't care about the haters. I like the bald.
Today, we're discussing the Argonauts signing veteran CFL quarterback Nick Arbuckle, who, last I checked, has a full head of hair.
An action-packed Saturday full of upcoming CFL preseason games.
The Alouettes signing a longtime NFL defensive lineman.
A rising receiver suffering a torn ACL in training camp with the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
An assistant general manager, Vince Magri, leaving the Argonauts for the Buffalo Bills. But first,
the Rough Riders defeated the Blue Bombers in preseason action on Monday, 25-12. Shea Patterson hit Canadian rookie Ajoa Joe for a 38-yard touchdown in Saskatchewan's lone aerial score of the game, while Terry Wilson stole the show late for Winnipeg after poor showings from Chris Streveler and Eric Berrier. Dunk, you made your pre, halftime, and postgame hosting debuts with Harvard Media and 620 CKRM, the radio rights holder for the Riders. And Hodge, this was your first chance to watch this year's Bombers. What were your thoughts on the games?
The major thought for me is Trevor Harris, from the Riders' perspective, looked spry when I saw him in action at training camp and the Riders' green and white day. And I thought was really solid on this day, albeit the Bombers left a bunch of their starters at home, although Willie Jefferson made the trip for some, you know, inexplicable reason, I would say. I was kind of surprised that he made that trip. But anyway, Harris, I thought, looked pretty good. He got some of the nervousness out, even though he said he didn't really feel nervous before the game after being back on the field for the first time since, I believe it was July 15th, 2023, when he suffered that devastating tibial plateau fracture to his right knee and leg. And he's looked good in training camp, carried that over to the game. Seems like there's some intriguing targets there that he has to use. We know about the Canadians, and Keen Schaefer-Baker had an outstanding catch, but Keyshawn Johnson is a guy that has consistently made plays in training camp and I think has a lot of upside. And is an intriguing name to watch because he came from the NFL, was a late round draft pick, made over $2 million, but is still out in Canada, balling out, trying to continue his career. That said, the major positive, I think, for Saskatchewan has to be how Trevor Harris looked and the potential for him this season.
Yeah, for those who want the hard numbers, I went through both depth charts, did a deep dive. Winnipeg started 10 projected starters out of 24. That included 6 on offense, 4 on defense. And the Riders started 22. The only two that sat were defensive backs Amari Henderson and CJ Revis. I was a little bit surprised that Willie Jefferson played. I was a little surprised that Stanley Bryant played, but I think it's worth noting that the Bombers don't play their second preseason game until Friday, May 31st, and then they will actually open the regular season only 6 days later on Thursday, June 6th. So maybe the logic is you play your vets now so they have longer to rest, but Zach Kolaris didn't play. So presumably Kolaris is going to play at home. And if you're going to play Kolaris, don't you think you're going to dress your vets anyway? Like you're not sending him out behind a rookie left tackle, right? Or like backup offensive lineman. Like you're dressed. So I was a little bit confused about the way Winnipeg went about that. To me, I think we'll stick with the QBs. I mean, Chris Streveler looked the way that he looked in practice when I was there on Saturday. I thought he struggled to push the ball down the field, looked a little bit gun shy. But I did think he looked accurate, at least in the short yardage stuff that he did. And I also think that he looked as quick and fast and strong as ever, breaking some tackles, getting out and scrambling. Eric Berrier, who I thought was a really intriguing addition from this team out of Eastern Washington University this offseason, obviously struggled throwing 2 really bad interceptions over the middle. And then Terry Wilson, who I actually talked to a lot after practice on Saturday. I thought he was the sharpest quarterback in practice with the Bombers on that particular day. Looked great, right? Was really accurate throwing on the run, found Kevin Tclarisius, the team's second round pick, for a touchdown late. And yeah, it's true that he's going up against a bunch of third stringers, fourth stringers by the late stretches of the game, but he's also playing alongside third and fourth stringers too, which I think helps even that out just a little bit. So in terms of the quarterback play, I thought Winnipeg obviously had some peaks and valleys. The other spot everybody in Winnipeg is watching is right tackle, the spot that was vacated by Jermarcus Hardrick, who of course made his Riders debut at right tackle with his new team, where he's now the highest paid American offensive lineman in the league. And Eric Lofton, who got the start for Winnipeg and coincidentally played for the Riders last season, made 14 starts for them, mostly at left tackle, some at right. Looked like Eric Lofton. He gave up a sack, right? Defensive end went fully around the horn. That was when Eric Berrier was in the game. Berrier didn't really have a spot to step up, and Lofton gave up a sack. So, you know, I still think that is a spot the Bombers need to be a little bit concerned about. All in all, it was not, I think, a very strong showing for the Bombers. But then again, it is preseason, so I'm not suggesting by any stretch of the imagination that they should be pressing the panic button. I did, however, expect to see a little bit more out of a team that has had obviously a ton of success over the last 4 seasons.
It was nice to see a couple of Canadian rookies get into the end zone, one on each side, and Kevin Tclarisius for the Bombers and Ajojo for the Saskatchewan Roughriders. But to me, the big storyline was the disappointment of Eric Berrier, because he's a guy that, going back to his time in college, I was very high on as a CFL prospect. I know the number of people in the league felt the same way, and he bounced around a little bit south of the border, both in the NFL and in some spring leagues before making his way up here. There was high expectations as a guy coming out of that Eastern Washington University program where so many great CFL quarterbacks have developed from, and a guy who was more illustrious in his career than almost any of them, right? We're talking about a guy who, much like Bo Levi Mitchell, won the Walter Payton Award as the top player in FCS football, a 2-time Big Sky Offensive Player of the Year. This is a legitimate, productive quarterback at a school that has produced the likes of Mitchell and Vernon Adams Jr. and Matt Nichols, among others, right? So you expect him to come up here and have more success than he's shown in practice or he showed in that preseason game. Terry Wilson being the front runner now for that third string spot with the Bombers is a little bit of a surprise, because as soon as Berrier was signed, you thought that would be his role to lose. clearly there is more that he needs to do to clean up his understanding of the Canadian game. Hopefully he can come out in their second preseason outing and show out and show the player that we saw in college. But I was expecting a lot more from him in the CFL.
There's a major question mark still with the Rough Riders offensive line. Hodge, you mentioned Eric Lofton going from Saskatchewan to Winnipeg. Well, that was because Jamarcus Hardrick went the other way, kind of almost a trade, but not really. He is the highest paid American offensive lineman in the league, and he's brought the energy. He nearly knocked Kian Schaefer-Baker to the turf after one of Schaefer-Baker's catches, and he's just flying around. That has been seen in training camp consistently, but on the other side, his bookend, it looks like Trevor Reed, the rookie, seems to have, I don't know what you want to call it, the head start to be the left tackle. He's taken the bulk of the first team reps in training camp. He was the starter on game day. So it seems like they've kind of penciled that in there as Reed being the starter from the jump. That said, Corey Mace was quick to say that it's still a competition. We're going to try and push him and see if some of the guys behind him can overtake him for that spot. But, you know, he had his moments where he left you wanting more. Yes, he's a rookie, but if this is a guy that they're going to run out there to protect Trevor Harris's blind side, he needs to get up to CFL speed and everything else that goes along with it really quickly. That said, it's difficult when your first few reps in the CFL do come against Willie Jefferson, even though it's in the preseason. But he's a guy it seems like the Riders are going to go with to start the year, and he's got to get it going pretty quick.
Somebody who I thought really flashed for the Riders, and granted, I always watch these games more so for the Bomber side, because that's who I'm tasked writing about, of course, here at Three Down Nation. But I thought that Dante Myers was very sharp in the return game. I thought that he looked unbelievably fast. He brought back one punt return for 60 yards. Ended up getting called back due to a holding penalty, but I also didn't think that he needed the holding penalty to break off that yardage. This is a guy who played at D2 Delta State, so he's come from essentially nowhere, and obviously the Riders have a very talented return man in Mario Alford, but this is a player, in my opinion, you have to find a way to keep around. I know that, you know, you've got Sean Dane, and, you know, you've got Kian Schaefer-Baker and Sam Emelis and all these very talented receivers, but this is a guy at the very least you have to have on the practice roster, because with how much abuse the returners take in this league, you're going to need at least two good ones. And I thought, just based on what he showed on Monday alone, Dante Myers should stick around for the Riders.
Indeed, I would agree. I mean, it might be tricky because it seems like Keyshawn Johnson has a starting spot in that receiving core, and it does seem like from a ratio standpoint that the Riders are going to start three Canadians in that group, as they should, right? Mitch Pickton, Kian Schaefer-Baker, and Sam Emelis. And I would argue that Schaefer-Baker and Emelis, you know, have as much talent as almost any other Canadian receiver in the league, if not right there with, you know, Nick Dembski. So that's going to make it difficult for Myers to stay on the roster, but he's looked spry. He made multiple plays in training camp and carried that over into the game.
I'm interested about one player, Duncan, your assessment of him and his chances to make a roster, because I think he's a fascinating prospect, and that's Clint Ratkovich, who had some nice carries in that game. He's the super back out of Northern Illinois University, fullback type of body type, got compared going into the NFL draft to Kyle Juszczyk. We don't very often see an American fullback come up to this league, let alone one that can carry the rock. Is he going to push for sort of that Frankie Hickson role with the Riders, or is this more of a flash in the pan, see what he can do type of player?
You know, I don't think you'd give a guy as many reps as he's gotten in training camp, and even in the game, he led the Riders in rushing. I think it was 6 carries for 40 yards, if I remember right. So I do think he's got a legit chance to make the roster. And part of it, as you said, is that super back versatility, right? He could be on the field as a running back. Obviously, we've seen what he can do as a fullback and carrying the football, and he could be that H-back for you as well. Very versatile. You know, Wes Cates noted to me on the CKRM post-game show that when he came into the league as a rookie with the Calgary Stampeders, he was a fullback, backup running back to Joffrey Reynolds, backup receiver, and he was a core special teamer. So you think of that, and I didn't know that about Wes Cates until we were talking about Ratkovic. Then you start to understand how he could potentially fit into the Riders roster, especially if he proves when the regular season comes that he can get it done on special teams. So I'm just going to go based off the reps. It's what I was doing with Trevor Reed at left tackle and him having that head start to start at that position, that it seems like he's going to have a shot to make the final roster.
When you need to work quickly and confidently across different apps and platforms, consistent quality communication is key. Whether you're writing documents, emails, or presentations, you need Grammarly. It's an AI writing partner that helps you get your work done faster with better writing. It's always there to help because it works where you work across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can get more done no matter where you're writing. Grammarly is the gold standard of responsible AI, trusted by millions of professionals for 15 years. It gives you personalized writing suggestions based on your audience, goals, and context. Plus, tone suggestions to help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. 96% of users agree Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I will fully confess that as the game went on, I had a really hard time telling who was touting the rock for the Riders, because they've, of course, got AJ Ouellette, who's the starter. They've got Ratkovic, who's there. And then they've also got Thomas Bertrand-Hudon. And yeah, all three of them got a lot of looks. And I'm just going to point out that they are all white at a position where we generally do not see white players playing very often. I'm not suggesting that's a good or a bad thing. I'm just saying that usually white running backs stick out like a sore thumb, and I had to check the numbers. And also from a distance, like, Ouellette wears 45, Ratkovic wears 25, you know, especially watching on CFL Plus, which is not, at least for me, wasn't quite as clear as a normal television broadcast. Don't get me wrong, I thought CFL Plus was good overall. They were certainly a lot better than the CFL's awful live stats, told, by the way, were going to be better and fixed. I'm sick and tired of hearing that from this league. I will believe that the stats are great when I see it at this point. I don't like sitting here ripping the league, but my goodness, there are amateur softball leagues that have better live stats than this, I swear. Credit to whoever fixed it 24 hours later. Just want to, you know, let you know that that's about 23.99 hours too late. But anyways, moving on. So I had a hard time telling who was pounding the rock for the Riders at times. I was shocked once the final stats came in to see that by far the least productive running back of that group of three, plus Frankie Hixon, was AJ Ouellette, especially considering how few guys in Winnipeg's front six or front seven, whatever you want to call it, made the trip. So maybe you're right, JC. Maybe running backs don't matter after all.
Maybe he's just a proponent.
But fullbacks do.
Yeah.
True. Superbacks and fullbacks do matter. That's the twist. Maybe.
The Argos have signed veteran quarterback Nick Arbuckle, with franchise pivot Chad Kelly suspended for a minimum of 9 games. Also needs reinstatement to get back into the league. Do you think the journeyman passer can make an impact this season with the Boatmen?
I will fully admit that when this announcement came out, I rolled my eyes just a little bit, because Nick Arbuckle has been so poor the last couple of seasons. However, the more time has gone on, the more I like this move for not only Nick Arbuckle, but for the Toronto Argonauts. And I'll tell you why. Nick Arbuckle's best season in the CFL was 2019 when he came in, played a number of games for an injured Bo Levi Mitchell and looked really good, threw 11 touchdowns to 5 interceptions. His quarterback's coach at that time, and his quarterback's coach his entire tenure with the Stampeders from 2017 to 2019, was Ryan Dinwiddie, who is, of course, now the head coach and all things offense in Toronto. And he also played pretty well under Dinwiddie during the shortened 2021 season. Yes, he eventually lost the starting job to McLeod Bethel-Thompson, should be noted. But the point is, when it's Arbuckle plus Dinwiddie, that equation seems to have something working for it. Without Dinwiddie, Arbuckle has really struggled. Should be noted, he was set up for failure with the Elks in 2022, and I think was also probably set up for failure to at least some extent with the Red Blacks in 2023. So I don't think he's been put in a great position to have success, but he obviously has not achieved that on his own. The other thing that I will say, and by the way, want to point out, Ben Grant, if you haven't read his column about Toronto's scrimmage, by the way, note for all of us at Three Down, our listeners and media across the country, a scrimmage is an intra-squad game. Inter-squad means two separate entities playing against each other. A scrimmage is not inter-squad. That would be the Argonauts against the Tiger Cats, or the Argonauts against the York Lions, or the Toronto Argonauts against the GTA Grizzlies, or anything. This is an intra-squad game. Sorry to get on a grammar soapbox, but that's been driving me crazy the last couple of days. Intra-squad means the same team competing against each other. But getting back to football, Grant, whose opinion I hold in very high esteem, said that Arbuckle looked great. And I will also say this, something that is, I think, unequivocally true about Nick Arbuckle, though he has struggled on the field in recent years, he is a fantastic person. Right, he is a high quality professional. He's a family man. He is somebody who I think, from a personality standpoint, from a leadership standpoint, has a lot to contribute. And for an organization that has had a toxic cloud sitting on it for the last several months due to the Chad Kelly situation, the arguable mishandling of that situation, and the ongoing toxicity that may or may not be happening still in that building or being felt in that building, I think Nick Arbuckle is somebody who can come in and provide some of those intangibles to help clear the air a little bit and provide some legitimate veteran leadership, but also maybe a fresh breeze into a place where that toxic air has started to become a little bit stale.
Hodge, you are getting as soft as your baby smooth head. Ooh. Because Nick Arbuckle is not going to save this team over the next 9 weeks. Now, we all know what he is as a quarterback, and he has been fine at times, right? And he has looked good in training camp at a lot of stops before floundering once the real live bullets have started to fly. This is on par for what we expect from Nick Arbuckle, but I do not have any confidence that he can come in and be a guy who's going to win you enough games to be competitive over a 9-game stretch, or in fact, be any better than Cameron Dukes, who has shown flashes as well, but I also have serious doubts about as a starting quarterback. To me, Arbuckle was not even the best available quarterback on the market. And I know we've harped on this guy a ton on the podcast, and rightfully so, but if you want a guy that potentially has enough juice to maybe help you out, it's Taylor Cornelius, right, who remains unsigned as a free agent, somebody who can throw the ball down the field, who can run around a little bit if you need him to. Nick Arbuckle is coming off a season where he was effectively benched and shoved to the back ends of the roster in favor of a fourth stringer who held on to the football too long, right? This is not a guy who's coming off of recent success. He has floundered at every stop he has been at. And despite the fact that he is, by all accounts, a wonderful person, a good professional, I don't think he makes this team any better at a spot where they're going to probably need some help here very quickly.
I think he definitely makes this team better for a number of reasons that might not necessarily be his play on the field, but just the veteran presence that was lacking in that quarterback room. They released, I believe, was Hunter Rackett at the quarterback position, who was a raw rookie with the Argos. And at least Nick Arbuckle knows the scheme, has a rapport with Ryan Dinwiddie, as Hodge noted, from their time in Calgary, and has played with Davaris Daniels at least before. And I would say that I think it's a much different situation for Nick Arbuckle to walk into. The Argonauts offensive line is much better than the Ottawa Redblacks. Their receiving group as a whole this year, you know, you might have a decent argument at who has the better one, but I think this one is better. Jalen Acklin was out for some time last year with the Redblacks. That didn't help Arbuckle. I'm not saying he's going to be the savior or play at an MOP type level, but I think the Argos are better off having Arbuckle there than Taylor Cornelius for a number of the reasons that I listed. You know, I think Taylor Cornelius had a decent shot with some playmakers around him and just couldn't make anything of it. And look how different that offense was when Trey Ford came into the game in Edmonton. So this move to me makes a lot of sense for a number of reasons, because it's not like the Argos can just go out there and throw a bunch of money at Nathan Rourke like some fans in the GTA would like them to do, because he's still NFL focused now. So other than Taylor Cornelius and barring going out there and making a trade, I think it's the best possible scenario right now for Toronto.
Well, and JC, you said, and I believe the quote was, he's floundered everywhere he's been. That is simply inaccurate. He threw 11 touchdowns to 5 picks with the Calgary Stampeders, and at the very least helped that team tread water while there was turmoil with Bo Levi Mitchell.
It's 5 years out of the lineup.
Yeah, it was, but with the same head coach, right? And the same, not same head coach, but the current head coach of the Argonauts was helping run that offense, and he was also put in a position to be successful behind an offensive line that was arguably the best in the CFL at the time with a ton of weapons. Dunk, I think, laid it out perfectly. The Red Blacks did not have weapons last year. They had a rotating door at right tackle. They struggled with injuries elsewhere along the offensive line. Drew Desjarlais missed time. And there's something that Edmonton and Ottawa have in common, and that is that both offensive coordinators he played for have been fired since. So if you are Nick Arbuckle, I'm not saying Nick Arbuckle is going to go and start 12 games and win the Grey Cup. No. Can he help this team tread water? That is what they need to do right now. They need to tread water so that when Chad Kelly comes back, they are still in a good position to potentially win the East Division. To me, I think the answer is absolutely. Toronto has the best offensive line in the CFL, and I don't think that's up for debate. The only team that I think was realistically with them last year was Winnipeg. Guess what? Winnipeg lost Jamarcus Hardrick. Right tackle is going to be a problem spot for them. The Argonauts have the exact same offensive line coming back this year. Arguably, it's going to be even better because these guys have an entire year working together under their belt, building that cohesion. And I don't think their receiving core is the best in the CFL, but it is still a very solid receiving core. And of course, they're going to be able to run the ball with that offensive line, regardless who's back there beside Arbuckle. Kadeem Carey, I think, is on a revenge tour and is going to end up potentially having a big year. So I think that unlike the previous stops, Arbuckle is set up for success here. I was skeptical at first. I'm now more cautiously optimistic. But optimally for the Argos, this is a guy who's not even going to have to play, right? He is going to be standing on the sidelines almost as a second coach to Cameron Dukes. And if Cameron Dukes gets it done, great. Arbuckle's there to just help. Like, this is a team that only had two quarterbacks on the roster, if you're not counting Chad Kelly. They needed to add somebody anyway. To me, Arbuckle's the best choice.
They did have three. They released one, but JC...
Well, but I'm saying at the time of the signing, they only had two. You need to dress three.
True. JC, to your point, you know, 5 years ago, I'm trying to remember if I have my timing right on this. Verdun Adams Jr., you know, at least was once working out as a receiver in this league. And now he's been anointed as a franchise quarterback. I'm not saying that's going to happen to Nick Arbuckle.
But he's gone on an upward trajectory.
Yes.
Like 5 years ago was the last time Nick Arbuckle threw more touchdowns than interceptions, right?
That is true.
I'm just saying
and by the logic, like, by the same logic that he should be successful now because he has more weapons and he's with Ryan Dinwiddie, he should have been successful in 2021 when, again, he threw more interceptions than touchdowns and lost his job, right? This is not a case of a guy who has been successful in a very similar circumstance before.
That was different, though. The Argos didn't have the best offensive line in the league at the time. Ryan Dinwiddie was, you know, just getting there and setting the foundation for what he's created in Toronto. I think it's an entirely different situation.
I agree, it's different. The Argonauts were not what they were in 2021, though it is true. He did lose the starting job. That is fair. I will also point out he went 4-4 as a starter with the Argonauts. His first win with the team was against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, who were darn near perfect. So he does have that to his name, at the very least, that he beat that very, very good Winnipeg Blue Bombers team. And again, I'm not saying he's going to be the guy. Nobody's saying that. The question was, can he make an impact? I think the answer is yes. Absolutely. And that's even if he doesn't necessarily play.
Agreed. JC, you disagree?
I disagree. I'm sorry. He'll make an impact. And it's going to be when he throws more interceptions than touchdowns.
No, but he can make an impact and not play.
As long as he's on the bench, then that's fine. I'll agree with you on that. Experience is fine.
I will also say, yeah, 2021, he threw 5 touchdowns to 6 interceptions. Though I think that is also counting his stats from when he eventually got to Edmonton.
Who knows if the stats are right?
Yeah, I don't trust any stats. I more strongly trust Ben Grant's stats that he put together with his clipboard.
Ben Grant should go and help Genius Sports out
at the intra squad game in Toronto. More than I trust CFL.ca stats. Anyways, this weekend is loaded with CFL preseason action as the Ottawa Redblacks visit the Hamilton Tiger Cats, the BC Lions visit the Calgary Stampeders, the Saskatchewan Roughriders visit the Edmonton Elks, and the Toronto Argonauts visit the Montreal Alouettes, all of which are available exclusively to watch on CFL Plus. JC, which game are you most looking forward to and why?
Personally, it's the BC Lions because I think this is a team that... Well, maybe it is a homer pick. But look, this is a team that everyone thinks has to take that next step this year and surpass the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in the West Division that is looking towards a potential home Grey Cup. But they have some serious question marks, right? They're going to have to find 2 starters in that receiving core, probably a starter in the secondary, and sort of reshuffle that defensive line as well as determine who they've got at left guard on an offense that's going to be far more run heavy this season with William Stanback in the backfield. They've got a lot of question marks and they've got some really intriguing names that we'll get to see for the first time. Travis Fulham is a guy who put up some big numbers in his first NFL season as a UDFA and then wasn't afforded quite the opportunities in the subsequent seasons, is now apparently showing out in camp for the Lions. We'll get to see him run with the first team for the first time, presumably in this preseason game. That's a guy I've been looking forward to watching all offseason. The same with Aiden Eberhardt, who last year absolutely blew everything up in the preseason and then had to bide his time and sit behind that talented receiving core. He's looking to step into a starting role in year 2. Does he look like the same player, or is one of these unknown rookies going to push him? I think there are intriguing names to watch with the Lions. I think they've added some good rookies, both American and Canadian, and I am intrigued to see how they are looking in this most important of seasons.
The number one storyline to follow has to be Bo Levi Mitchell, and if he plays, and if he does play, how many snaps he takes and how he looks. But in that game, I'm going to be looking at the quarterback position on the other side as well, because Ottawa has a pretty deep depth chart of quarterbacks there. It looks like Drew Brown is going to be the starter. His contract shows it. The reps have shown it, it seems like, in training camp. But you look at the guys behind him, Dustin Crum, Jeremiah Masoli, who's, you know, still trying to get back to full health from his injury. They like Jake Dunaway. And there's also Tyree Adams there as well. That's 5 quarterbacks on the roster. You wouldn't think they're going to be able to keep all of them, unless some of those guys are going to end up on an injured list here or there. But I'm curious to see how that shakes out, because I think there are some other teams around the league, one of them we just talked about in the previous segment, the Toronto Argonauts, that might look at those quarterbacks and potentially have some interest if they get released. And then also with the Red Blacks, who's going to be their starting running back entering the season? We've talked about Reguil Armstead on the podcast. Kylan Hill is also competing for that role as well. They brought in Ronnie Brown. So I think that's one of the intriguing positions.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Fishing battles to watch this weekend.
I knew that JC was going to pick BC, and I knew Justin was going to pick Hamilton. I knew.
Mine was mostly Ottawa.
I knew it. I wish that I could have put money on that in retrospect. The game that I'm going to pick is Saskatchewan at Edmonton. And I think we've already seen Saskatchewan play, so I'm going to more focus on the Edmonton side of it. I want to see what McLeod Bethel-Thompson looks like in a CFL offense. Yes, he has taken some time away from the game, or at least from this particular league. But he's also somebody who has played a ton of professional football across a ton of different spots. I want to see how he looks. I want to see how Trey Ford looks. I also think something that is very interesting is how Edmonton's defensive line is going to look. This is a unit that I think had some pretty high highs last year, but they also lost arguably their best player in AC Leonard, who kind of simultaneously did and did not retire, but is still a free agent. So who even knows what's going on with him? But, you know, you look at Antonio Alfano, a guy who we'll talk about a little bit later in the show, who could contribute. They've got a ton of other Canadians. Noah Curtis, I thought, had a very good rookie season. They've got a former first-round NFL draft pick and Robert Kimdiche. Like, there is a lot of very interesting, I'm not going to say a lot of talent, because I don't know how good the talent is, but there is a lot of intriguing options for a team that I think simultaneously needs to get better along the defensive line, but also didn't add like proven guys. Like, this isn't a team that went out and signed, whoever's available at free agency. You know, Pete Robertson was available. They didn't sign him. He went to BC, right? There's lots of guys who were available. They took a pass on all of them. They clearly are building this thing from inside, and I'm excited to see who flashes, because this is a unit that has to be good, right, if this team is going to be successful in 2024.
Another storyline I'm watching, going back to Hamilton, we talked about the first preseason game, Clint Ratkovich being a rare American fullback. Well, the Hamilton Tiger Cats appear to be attempting, or at least experimenting with, the idea of having an American tight end, something that we haven't seen in the CFL since Jeff Tedford was with the BC Lions and took what turned out to be a great pass rusher in AC Leonard and was throwing passes to him out here on the West Coast. They've got Cameron McDonald in camp, Michael Ezekiel as well. Thaddeus Moss, of course, was the big name who got cut early on and I believe has since retired. But I want to see how that's going to look in that offense with Scott Milanovic. Obviously, having been in the NFL recently, what sort of ideas and schemes and plays has he drawn up for the Canadian game with potentially an American tight end? That's a really intriguing thing to watch for me.
Just to give some balance here, fellas, is there anything that stands out, because we haven't talked about these teams yet, I don't think, the Montreal Alouettes or the Calgary Stampeders and playing their first preseason games and what you might want to see from them?
I mean, the Alouettes haven't really changed much since last season when they made their Cinderella Grey Cup run. Yeah, they lost Luol Ugowak, but they've also added Isaac Adeyemi Berglund at that spot. And I think the other defensive end spot was going to be up for grabs. Well, now we've got Sean Lemon playing there, though obviously he could miss some time this season. We're not sure what the appeal of his suspension will result in. On the other side of the ball, I mean, it's quarterback, obviously, right? You got Cameron Dukes. You've got Brian Scott, who the club seems high on, though he didn't really play last year. And then you've got Nick Arbuckle, who will presumably take some reps as well. So I think that's the intriguing side to me. But ultimately, I don't think there's a lot of jobs up for grabs in this game, right? Toronto, Montreal, like these rosters are pretty well set. Yeah, the Argos got picked on in free agency, but they also added a ton of veterans who I think are you know, pretty safe to bet on are going to fill a lot of those spots that they lost out on. So that to me is the least interesting of the games. But am I going to watch the whole thing? Yeah, obviously, I'm still going to watch the whole thing.
I think the two storylines that I'd be watching for the Alouettes is, A, how does Reggie White Jr. look after missing all of last season with injury? Can he be the same player that we saw starting to emerge in 2022 and potentially start in that receiving core? And then who's going to be their running back, right? Because we have Walter Fletcher there, who's presumably the heir apparent to William Stanback, but that doesn't seem to be set in stone. They've got guys like Stevie Scott III, who has been apparently pressing for that job in camp. And then they could potentially make it a ratio spot as well, because they've got Jestrin Antwi, who has played a big rotational role in the past, Sean Thomas Erlington, who has starting experience, and Michael Herzog, who they drafted, who is as good a pure runner as any Canadian back we've seen in the draft in recent history. He just struggles a little bit as a pass blocker, but hypothetically with that trio, you could also make that a Canadian spot. So how the Alouettes manage those reps, who emerges in that backfield, will be a really intriguing thing to watch.
With Calgary, I want to see if Jake Mayer looks confident, and also does Jalen Philpott kind of resemble his old self before that lower body injury that kept him out for all of last season. And then on the defensive side of the ball for the Stamps, it seems like they have a lot of defensive backs. So who is lining up as the first team in the secondary there would be intriguing to me.
Also, Malik Henry, is he back 200%? Mm-hmm. I know Dave Dickinson told us at the combine that Jalen and Malik are going to be good to go, but obviously, you know, these are big, serious injuries these guys are coming back from. And as a receiver, you got to have the ability to change direction on a dime, which can be tough, right, when you're working back from a lower body injury. So we'll see. It's now time for Hodges Heritage Moment. On this day in 2015, the Montreal Alouettes signed Michael Sam. The Missouri product was a seventh-round pick of the St. Louis Rams in 2014 and made headlines for being the NFL's first active, openly gay player. Sam left the Alouettes for 2 weeks in June for an undisclosed reason before sitting out five consecutive games. He finally made his CFL debut in week 7, but permanently left the team shortly thereafter. In an interview with Dan Patrick, Sam said, quote, "I never really wanted to go to the CFL, but I did, and I committed to going," close quote. Sam announced his retirement in August, stating that playing football was detrimental to his health. The 34-year-old now serves as an assistant coach in the European League of Football. Dunk, what do you remember about Michael Sam's tenure in the CFL?
It was short-lived, but there was a lot of hype about it. And I remember talking to personnel people around the league who thought, well, this guy could actually be pretty good up here. He kind of fits the mold of a CFL pass rusher. That didn't pan out. I just hope he's happy with where he's at in his life right now.
Yeah, it seems like he's found the love of the game again. Had a successful season playing for the Barcelona Dragons. I believe it was last year. Now he's an assistant coach in Poland with the Wrocław Panthers. He was always a player that I thought coming out of college was going to be a successful CFL player. I think, unfortunately, with everything that happened, all the focus that was on him as he entered the NFL as a trailblazer, he lost the love of the game. And coming up here after doing things like a stint with Dancing with the Stars, and he just wasn't ready to compete, and he wasn't in the right headspace. And unfortunately, it left a bad taste in some people's mouths that he wasn't able to live up to those expectations and became a little bit of a sideshow. But I'm glad that he's in a better place now, and he's rekindled his love of this sport.
Yeah, something that I was not aware of until in prep for this, I was looking over his Wikipedia page. Something I did not realize is Sam had 7 siblings. Growing up as a child, he watched one of his brothers die from a gunshot wound. He has another brother who has been missing since childhood. He also has a sister who was born before him who died as an infant. He's got a couple of brothers who have been in and out of prison. So, like, this is somebody who was born into an extremely difficult circumstance in life, and became a star football player. And for better or worse, became one of the most famous people on the planet for a reason that is completely separated from all of those things. And I know some people think that, well, it shouldn't matter what somebody's sexual orientation is. We should just not ask about it, not talk about it, whatever. Some people feel very strongly the other way, that no, we should be very openly proud about people. And it's Pride next month, obviously, that people are of a certain sexual orientation. Some people feel that way because they are proud allies. Some people feel that way because they are against homosexuality. At the end of the day, I think it's wonderful that we have that representation in the CFL. But ultimately, I agree with what Doug said. This is somebody who has lived an entire life's worth of trials and tribulations, and did so before he was even really a fully grown adult. So at the end of the day, I just hope that Michael Sam is happy wherever he is in life. If he is still coaching in Europe, that's fantastic. If he wants to move on and do something else with his life, then he deserves the right to do that and the privacy that accompanies that. Because I don't know if you guys, I don't know if our listeners remember what it was like, but there was a time when on every sports show in America, it didn't matter, every single day, whatever Michael Sam did, it was news. And I feel like that would be difficult for anybody to deal with, much less somebody who, again, obviously had a lot of trauma growing up in what would have been a very difficult childhood, full of violence and other very significant challenges.
It's time for the 3-minute drill. And according to the CFL rules, JC, I'm looking at you, there can only be one timeout used after the 3-minute drill in the fourth quarter, so let's keep it moving, okay? The Winnipeg Blue Bombers will be without the services of Adam Bakehill to start the season, as he's been added to the 6-game injured list. Is that a major loss for the club?
You know, Big Hill is a player the Bombers really need in November. I don't think they need him in June or July. So for that reason, I'm going to say no, especially because with his age, he turns 36 in October, they should be looking for an heir apparent at middle linebacker anyway. The Montreal Alouettes have signed longtime NFL defensive lineman Aaron Lynch, who made 21 sacks and almost $10 million U.S. dollars over the course of his 7-year NFL career. Do you think he has any gas left in the tank?
Well, this is a fascinating situation for me because he's been out of football since 2020. That's the last time he took the field. He was retired. Now he's coming out of it apparently for the love of the game, so hopefully he can find that extra juice. He can play a couple of years here, but I am skeptical, to say the least, that somebody's going to be ready to compete at this level after that much time off. The CFL is now letting players wear guardian caps during regular season games. Dunk, will we see any players wearing them in 2024?
I don't think so. It doesn't seem like the players like the look of them. It decreases their swag level. But guys, I do think this is somewhat of a sneaky way for the CFL to give themselves an out in potential future concussion lawsuits. The Hamilton Tiger Cats released receiver Justin McGriff after he suffered a torn ACL in practice. I can't catch a break. Hodge, have you ever seen a more snake-bitten player?
Not one that comes to mind. This is a guy who Ticats fans fell in love with during training camp last year, ended up suffering a season-ending injury to his leg in an off-field accident. Now he's got a torn ACL. I know the Ticats have signed him for 2025, but my goodness, this guy has had some bad luck. And also, I don't think I can think of a CFL player who had more hype despite never playing a game. Like, this guy has has been the star of two consecutive training camps, but hasn't suited up yet for a meaningful game. The Edmonton Elks have signed quarterback Cole McDonald, a former NFL draft pick who was with Toronto in 2021. Do you think he can make the roster?
I think he's got a chance because the Elks are competing a number of guys for that third string short yardage role. That seems to be where they view Cole McDonald. He's not necessarily going to be a threat to actually see meaningful playing time and throw the football. This is a guy who struggled when he had his opportunities in the XFL recently. I don't necessarily think he is a future starter in the CFL, but perhaps he's athletic enough, big enough to play that short yardage role for a team that values that position. Vince Magri has left his post as the assistant general manager of the Toronto Argonauts and is now a pro scout with the Buffalo Bills. Are the Argos going to miss him?
Definitely, especially when John Murphy was away from the team indefinitely, which I don't think was ever properly dealt with in his return. Vince Magri, for all intents and purposes, was the general manager, working very closely with Ryan Dinwiddie. He's been there for a long time, and the jump to the NFL, I think, is coming at a time that I thought would have actually happened sooner for Magri, considering that Chris Rossetti and Curtis Rukavina, another couple U Sports graduates who played football with me at the University of Guelph, went to the NFL rather quickly in their tenure after being with the Argos. I thought Vince Magri all along was on that similar track, and he finally gets that shot. The CFL will not make changes to its kickoffs for 2024, though a subcommittee has been formed to the Rules Committee, subcommittee to a committee, to review their future. Do you think this is a smart move, Hodge? Not the subcommittee, but the review?
I think that there should be a subcommittee that first decides on the subcommittee, and then that can report to the committee. No, but in all seriousness, I think this does make sense. I'm not opposed to a change. What I've been opposed to all offseason is there being no official communication from the league about a potential change. I've also not seen any published data regarding there being more injuries on kickoffs than other types of you know, forms of kickoffs that may or may not exist. So I'm not going to hate on change for change's sake. I'm open to a potential change, but I would like to better understand why a change would be made. So I applaud the CFL for not rushing to make a change. Like, and fully our hearts go out to Jack Hintzberger, who obviously suffered a terrible injury on a kickoff. But I don't think that that's reason for a knee-jerk reaction. Say, oh, now we got to get rid of all kickoffs. I want to see more facts. I want to see more figures. And I want to see them presented from the league directly and not leaked to its media partner. Darian Durant told the Sports Cage on CKRM 620 that Charleston Hughes was the toughest pass rusher he ever faced. Is that a surprise to you?
No, it's not a surprise. Charleston Hughes is one of the best pass rushers ever, period, bar none. Of course he's going to be one of the greatest that Darian Durant ever faced. This is as obvious as saying the sky is blue. Charleston Hughes was good. That's clear.
Or that Jumbo wants cheese on his burger.
Extra. Doesn't that make you a cannibal? That's actually what the C stands for. It stood for all along. Cannibal.
Hamilton Tiger Cats head coach Scott Milanovic called quarterbacks coach Jared Baines, quote, a rising star. Do you think he's being honest or just blowing smoke?
No, Scott Milanovic ain't into the game of blowing smoke. Let me tell you, he is concise and on point with his answers all the time. Now, full credit to Baines for rising in the ranks as a Canadian coach. And Milanovic doesn't just say these things about anybody. So when he's given out praise, it be real. The Blue Bombers have moved Canadian defensive tackle Cameron Lawson to the six-game injured list. Hodge, is that a big deal?
It's a big deal because this is a season-ending injury that Lawson has suffered. I think he is the obvious heir apparent to Jake Thomas. though Thomas is still on the roster, I think Lawson, especially making more money than Thomas, was going to be in a position to be a day one starter, possibly even as part of an all-Canadian interior with Winnipeg, right? They've drafted Tanner Schmeichel, they've drafted Kyle Sampson, so the club still has lots of depth here, but yes, this is a big loss. The Bombers really like Lawson. And I know that even Mike O'Shea was willing to admit that this injury is going to take longer than 6 weeks. Well, guess what? I can tell you right now, he's out for the year. He's not playing this season, and that sucks for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. On our final note, we would like to extend our sincerest condolences to the family members, friends, colleagues of Darren Detition, longtime TSN television personality who passed away this past week at the age of 57. He was in the middle of a long battle with cancer, made it clear that he was away from TSN for a year due to prostate cancer, came back with cancer still throughout his body, but continued to work because that's what he loved to do. I'm not sure I've ever seen such a strong outpouring on social media in the 10 plus years I've been on Twitter for someone's particular passing. Obviously, Darren touched a lot of people's lives, not only those he knew in person, but those who he knew only through SportsCenter, visiting people in their living rooms and kitchens for 30 years. He was also very involved, obviously, in the CFL on TSN at times. Most recently, he hosted the pre and some post game things for the 2022 Grey Cup in his home province of Saskatchewan. So we wanted to take some time, recognize Dutchie, as he was known to his family and friends. We're going to miss him.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.